Call to order for the June 23rd, 2020, Board of Technical Registration. Kurt, please start off with a roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Here.
Jack Gilmore.
Here.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Foose. Clarence McAllister. Clarence McAllister.
Clarence.
I'm here. Clarence is here.
Carmen Wyckoff. Can you say that again?
Present.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Winter. First item is the adoption of minutes. To approve, modify, or reject the May 26, 2020 board meeting minutes. Any of the members have any questions about the minutes? If not, let's go to a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that we adopt the minutes last month.
Okay. We have a motion and a second.
Carmen, say second.
Can I second? Mm-hmm. The board, the chair, vice chair will make a second motion. Okay.
Sorry, my mute disappeared. I'll third that one.
Great. Okay, let's, do we need to do a roll call or can we just do a motion? Ayes.
It's generally going to be safest to do a roll call vote.
Okay. Kurt, please do a roll call for the minutes.
All right, say aye or nay, or however you wish. Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Seeing as that we have no general public here, so we can bypass that particular reference. We have some formal hearing issues to take care of at 9:30, but in the meantime, we can go on to the enforcement matters. And I think we have some that we might be able to consent. Anybody want to start that motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would like to move that we consent cases 5A1, 2, 3, and 4.
Is there a second?
Carmen.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
We have a
motion.
Mr. Chair, may I ask for a separate discussion on cases 5A1 and 5A2? This is Alejandro Angel.
Okay.
Just because they're architect cases?
That's exactly right.
So the motion will stand then for 5A, 3, and 4. Can we get a roll call on those two items, please?
All right. Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
All right.
Yeah. Motion's passed.
Okay. Thank you. And I think we were going to take item 5A5 as a separate motion.
Yeah, it's administrative. Close.
Can somebody want to make a motion then to close that up administratively?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make
a motion. Mr. Chair, I...
Go ahead, Alejandro.
I was going to move that we dismiss 5A5 due to lack of board jurisdiction.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Mr. Winter, will you do a roll call then?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason. Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Motion passed.
Okay. Thank you. We have a call in for 583.
What? Where we dismissed it.
No, we dismissed. I'm sorry, we did dismiss 3 and 4. Mr. So it's Chairman, 1 and 2.
583 has indicated that he will not be able to attend today, so
okay.
You've already ruled on that.
All right, thank you. That was my mistake. Any other consent items anyone wants to discuss? Otherwise, we might go ahead and take 5A1 and 5A2. I think they're related. Okay. 5A1. This is case number P20-012. The synopsis of the complaint. On August 25th, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent firm, principal or respondent firm, and architect of record for the FLO Flow Yoga and Cycle Project in Chandler failed to deliver technically sufficient mechanical design plans in accordance with the contract, failed to complete corrections causing significant delays to the project, and abandoned the project after receiving substantial payment from the client. There is no one here.
Respondent talking should be on the line.
I'm here. This is Joshua Ailey.
Okay. Mr. Ailey, you have the floor. Can you share with us your position on this?
I didn't know if you guys received EAC report. I didn't know how much more you wanted me to go over because we went over it pretty heavily in detail, but I can give a full version or a brave version. I'm not sure exactly how much information you need, or I could be here to answer questions.
Well, if there are some specific positions you want to make clear to the board, this would be the time to do it. Otherwise, we could open it up for the board to ask you questions.
Well, I guess on there's multiple issues, and it's a longer story. There was a designer, an architect for the building. There was and his engineers and his contractor. There was our group and our contractor, and then kind of going through of what was being continued or dealt with project-wise. My issue is there was what was being done by one architect and their engineers versus our architecture firm and our engineers, and so we had a lot of confusion on that side. So I didn't have my notes to go through this, but I can pull up my notes if we wanted to go back through everything on the project. Or
well, there was an EAC meeting, and the results of that were to dismiss the case. Is there any other issues you want to present?
The EAC, by a vote of 2-1, dismissed the original violations through the complaint, and also the two violations that were added through assessment, those were dismissed as well.
Mr. Are you aware of that, that there was a motion to dismiss this case?
Mr. Ayler was in attendance at the EAC.
Okay, great.
Mr. Chair, I ask that we pull this case out of consent. This is Alejandro Angel. I'd like to ask some questions, please.
Very good.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ayler, so one item that wasn't entirely clear to me is that the plans were sealed and prepared by Richard Euler, and but the contact and responses and all the, you know, there's the registering charge seems to be their you know, Josh Euler. So can you help me clarify how that works? And
sure. I mean, we're the two partners. He's also my father, and we work hand in hand. I mean, if you guys had a camera in our office, or we share the same office in our space. We've done that since we started ARC-1 in a closet back X amount of years ago, plus 10 years ago, and we're in full communication all the time, every time. So when we have a client for a project that he would be the registrant on or I would be the registrant on, we're both in contact with each other all the time. And so I was as a registrant, but I was more the project manager of that one, where he was the registrant of that project.
Thank you. And so I understand a lot of what transpired and have no concerns. My one concern is related to the AC. It seems like the installation to the building was single phase, and when you were asked to specify AC units, you specified three phase. I think in your response letter, you said that later on you found out that it was single phase.
That is correct, and we had fixed that, and we had assumed responsibility of making that change for nothing to be charged. We ended up working with the power company because the original architect who worked for the building owner, well, not original, other architect that was working for the building owner, there was three phase in the alley, and so we, as a commercial project with three phase available, we were working with that design ahead of the electrical because we were working in tandem on the project. So when we found out that the other architect working with the power company brought in single phase and the mechanical units were already designed at three phase, we worked, our side worked with the power company and changed that service over before it even got powered up. And never, the single phase never got powered up. And so we changed it out and worked with the power company to bring in three phase to the building. And there was no charge to our client for that. And so they've got a better system and a service to the building at no charge.
And can you clarify, when you say there was no charge to the client, do you mean for your professional time, or do you mean from the power company to replace the service?
All the way across from the ARC-1 paid for the service, the new service section, and the installation of that service section, and our design time.
Okay, that's very helpful, and I appreciate that. Last sort of question on it is, I mean, do you feel like you should have checked the type of power available or being specified for the building before you, but that's my concern, and I think I'll say it up front, I'm okay with dismissing the case based on the fact that you took care of things, but I worry about you specifying a three-phase system without asking what is being used and not getting the plans ahead of time. Shouldn't that be our responsibility?
Yes, and looking in hindsight, I wish that would have happened, and I know if there wasn't a designer, two architects, multiple engineers, and trying to push a project to full steam ahead, trying to get ahead of schedule because they didn't even have the site plan approval. So it has taught me a lesson in dealing with slow down projects, and this type of stuff can happen. So kind of getting to what we normally do in our normal protocols, this would have been caught. So going that fast and with that many people, basically chefs in the kitchen, we wouldn't do any more as a firm.
Okay. So thank you. I think that's helpful. Hopefully something, lesson learned and move on.
So Clarence, Do you have any comments on this? Let's move on.
Anybody else on the board want to ask questions?
No, it's dismissed. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to dismiss case 5A1.
Is there a second?
Mr. Chair, I second.
Thank you. We have a first, or a motion and a second. Mr. Winter, would you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Okay.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Eller.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to 5A2. This is case number P20-011. The synopsis of this complaint is alleged that on or about August 28, 2017, respondent signed and sealed the mechanical design plan for an air conditioning system on the Flow Yoga and Cycle project in Chandler, Arizona that called for a single phase panel to be to the building when all AC units in this design were three phase. It is further alleged that respondent's design plan failed to include sufficient outside air required for the system to function properly and successfully complete balanced testing. Okay, is there Mr. Eller available for this one as well?
Yes, I'll put you on for Richard this time.
Okay. Can you share with the board your position on this case?
Okay, could you repeat the question?
Yeah, you're familiar with the synopsis of the complaint regarding the AC unit, the single phase versus three phase. So there was a complaint issued, and we just wanted to get your position on this case.
I think this is correlates to the first one.
It does. But we're...
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, I mean, I think this is a companion case to the previous one.
It is.
So I would move that we dismiss this case as well.
Okay.
Dr. Angel, I'll second that. I believe they've helped their client out in this situation.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wyckoff. We have a motion to dismiss and a second. Kurt, could you do a roll call?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
And Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Thank you. That case is dismissed as well. Thank you, Mr. Eller.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got about 9 minutes before the hearing. We could go possibly to the resolution for letters of concern, 5B1. Okay. This is case number HI20-024 involving Daniel Atami. The synopsis of this complaint: on January the 21st, 2020, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to accurately report on the lack of caulking in the master bathroom shower during its home inspection at 29452.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. Thomas Rack, I'm here on the complaint.
Okay, thank you. Let me finish this introduction and we'll let you...
I'm sorry to interrupt. That's fine.
Let's see, let me start that over again. On January 21st, 2020, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to accurately report on the lack of caulking in the master bathroom shower during his home inspection at 29452 North 128th Lane in Peoria, Arizona, on or about December 13, 2019. Okay, Mr. Atami, hope I said that correctly. Share with us your position on this, please.
Is that the R-A-C-K?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
The respondent did not indicate that he would be on the line, but the alleger is, who is
okay.
Mr. Thomas.
Okay, as the alleger, Mr. Thomas?
Mr. Rapp.
Yes.
Rapp.
Yes, sir. In speaking with Mr. Thatcher, I understand that the basis of my complaint doesn't fall within the current standards that the board has set, and I would urge the board to, at some point, amend the standards to include such items as caulking. Now, I'll give you my reasons why. I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
If you're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a house, and I'm not an engineer, I'm not a contractor, so I'm going to rely on somebody to go through the house, point out defects, potential problems, and so forth, so I can resolve that with the seller before we go to closing. So Mr. Tommy came out, did his inspection. We closed escrow on December 30th. I had a contractor come out in January, early January, to work on some of the items, discrepancies, and so forth. And that's when we discovered that the shower in the master bath was missing caulking, had caulking that had been separated, caulking that had failed, and so forth. To the extent now, we looked at it and said, most likely there's going to be water damage behind those panels. Now, had I known about that, and my concern, and the reason I brought the complaint initially, in Mr. Itami's report on page 30 and page 40, he talks about missing caulking around the spout in the guest bedroom, the tub spout in the guest bedroom. And that's all he pointed out. Now, had he told us about the master bath, we would have gone to the seller and said, we've got a real problem here. We don't know what's behind there. We don't know if there's dry rot. We don't know if there's water. Either you fix it, or we walk away from the contract, or we come up with an agreed amount so that we'll take care of it. I had a contractor in here just recently doing the work. It's going to cost me $16,000 because of all the water damage and dry rot behind that towel. Now, had I known that beforehand, been a whole different story. Maybe we wouldn't have purchased the property, or we would have held the seller accountable for this. So my point being, I expect them to do a professional job. I expect them to point out every potential defect. Now, I understand from a liability standpoint, they're going to say, well, we can't tell what's behind the wall. That's fine. Put a disclaimer in there and saying, you're missing the caulking, whatever. We can't see what's behind that wall, and so there could be damage, maybe not damage. It's entirely up to you at that point to take whatever steps are necessary. And so I'm urging you, please, to amend the standards to include that so that in the future someone does not get stuck like we did with an inspection that doesn't cover these items, and now I have to expend a great deal of money to fix it. So that's all. And if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer those.
Any board members have questions for Mr. Rack?
Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Angel. I'm looking at the packet. On page 3,893 of our packet, which is page 30 of the inspection report, I see that the inspector noted, specifically under tub and shower condition, maintenance and repairs are needed at the tubs and showers. Consult a qualified professional to make repairs as needed. And then also observed in that same page, we recommend caulking, grouting, repair at tubs and showers as required. Pay particular attention to fixtures, wall transitions and shower tub floor transitions. So I actually I mean, don't know to what extent Mr. Rack is aware of what the inspector noted, but I certainly think that meets the inspector's obligation to notice unusual conditions, even though he's not required to report in caulking.
Sir, can I address that? Well, basically what they're saying is, why should I hire an inspector if they expect me to go out there and look for repairs and do maintenance on the showers and whatever? I mean, the reason I'm hiring the inspector, you tell me what's wrong. Not for me to spend my time trying to find out what's wrong. If I'm going to do that, why am I hiring an inspector in the first place?
The idea here, and I'm sorry you're going through this, is the inspector can't be an expert at everything, so I think he makes his observations. If he observes missing caulking or bad transitions, he notes that, which he did. I think if he had found evident water damage, he would have mentioned it too, but if it's not evident, that's not something he can do. And certainly not for, you know, the timing and scope and the cost of an inspection.
Well, I guess my concern is he shows the picture, the tub spout, saying with an arrow saying you need caulking over here. The missing, the failing, the that was pulled away from the master shower was much worse than this. If you're going to show me a picture of the spout saying you need kind of be the caulking here, why didn't you show me the caulking in the shower saying, hey, there's an issue here. You need to have somebody come in and take a look at it. So I'm just urging you to put, amend your standards to include that so that in the future, and I understand they're going to say, well, we don't know what's behind the wall. That's fine. Put that in your report. We know missing or failing caulking. We have like what's behind the wall, but we're bringing this to your attention, and you can do whatever you want with it at that point.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rack. Any other board members have anything to share?
Well, I just want to emphasize, this is Gene Montgomery, again, what Alejandro said was, well, a couple of things. First of all, it is noted that there is an apparent concern with the shower in the inspection report, and in fact, he makes a recommendation to consult a professional for further investigation and repairs. But secondly, a home inspector is not responsible for hidden damage, to the best of my knowledge. I don't think he has the skill set or the instrumentation to determine that there is water damage in piping systems beyond the wall surface.
Well, I understand that. I'm not trying to say that they're responsible for the water damage. My point being, if he would have pointed out that there was missing caulking in the shower, that the caulking had separated from the wall panels, that the caulking was failing, at that point, I'm saying, hey, tell me what's behind the wall, because obviously you'd have to tear it out. But at that point, I'd be aware that there's a potential issue here. If we're missing caulking, there's a likelihood that water had gotten in between the seam and therefore could be compromising the structures behind the wall panels. At that point, then I could go to the sellers and say, we have an issue here, we have a problem, we need to resolve this some way before I go to closing. To find out after we've already closed on the house, I can't go back to the sellers now. They're going to say, well, you closed on it, it's your problem now, it's not mine. And so, understanding, I'm not asking the inspector to say, tell me what's behind there, but point out there's an issue here, it appears to be a problem here, and therefore you need to take the next step, whatever that step may be, down the road. Here, I didn't know anything about the shower head that he mentioned. That was the one in the guest bathroom, along with the tub stuff. That was in the guest bathroom. He never bothered to tell us anything about the master bathroom. And so, had I known, hey, it would have been a different story.
Mr. Rack, this is Mr. Gilmore.
Yes.
There was an EAC committee meeting, and they did notate some other minor issues with the report, but they didn't necessarily substantiate your claim here. So that's why there's a recommendation for a letter.
It's not covered with the current standards, and that's why I'm suggesting it might be nice if you folks amended the standards to include something like that.
Okay, so noted. Thank you.
We are convening a home inspector task force to revise the standards, Mr. Chair, so that may address this person's concerns.
Okay. With that understanding, can I get a motion?
Get a motion.
Anybody else want to discuss this matter some more?
Mr. Chair, I move that we issue a letter of concern to the inspector for minor reporting deficiencies as recommended by staff.
Thank you, Dr. Alejandro. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Winter, would you please do a roll call?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes. Thank you. It's 9:33. I think it's time to move on to our public hearing section. This item is item 4. Should we start with 4A1?
Let me say, see if the AG is online. Deanie, are you on the phone?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
I am. I am on the phone, but there's a lot of breakup on the transmission, so some difficulty here.
We hear you just fine, Deanie. Hopefully it won't be bad, but just let us know if you need us to repeat anything.
Okay, I will.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Ray. The floor is yours regarding case 4A1 P18-050 regarding Mr. Padilla.
This is an older case that you had voted to go to hearing, and it kind of, you know, was one of the older cases that didn't get attention for a while. Then when I got involved, you had two newer cases, P20002 and P20016. And when I looked at all of the cases, I don't know if you remember, but I suggested that the administrative functions or processes were not working for Mr. Padilla, and that we should refer this case for prosecution, all these cases for prosecution. Now, P18050 is too old to be prosecuted, but it can be used as a prior bad act in the newer cases. Pinal County has P20002, Pima County has P20016, and I know you only called P18050, but they really all need to be discussed together, I believe. And what I would suggest is that Pinal County has filed a criminal case against Mr. Padilla in P20002, and Pima County is in the process of filing a case against Mr. Padilla in P20016 with the idea of using P18050 as a prior bad act. And so this comes before you to determine whether you want to proceed with the administrative processes or close the case administratively and allow it to proceed as a criminal matter.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ray. I agree with your recommendation to include all three of these cases in this first motion for P20002 and P20016. Any of the board members want to discuss this? Have questions for Ms. Ray?
Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Angel. Ms. Ray, so what are the implications if we
just close the administrative cases, you know, and I understand there's, you know, criminal prosecution going on in Pinal County. Is it prudent, I mean, does that preclude us from reopening them later if we need to, or, you know, why wouldn't we finalize them?
Well, I think it's, you just kind of have to make the decision whether or not proceeding administratively is going to be effective, and it has not been effective. This gentleman has quite a bit of history. Now, should he do something again? You know, you can certainly, and I really don't know whether or not you can, I don't see any reason why you couldn't reopen them if you wanted to. Although age is always a factor, but, you know, when you're dealing with these cases, the longer they languish, the harder it is to prove them, really. You have difficulty with witnesses and difficulty with, you know, just all kinds of things when a case gets aged. But I think you could reopen them if you wanted to. I don't see any reason why you couldn't. And certainly, if there was a new case, you could consider it as well.
Ms. Ray,
we haven't heard anything from Mr. Padilla for a while, so that I don't know whether that means nobody's complaining or he's not doing anything.
Yeah. Ms. Ray, this guy. Go ahead.
Yeah, from what I saw in both of those complaints, 2002 and 2016, the impression that other people have is that he continues to practice, and I agree with you that, you know, the administrative case is not going to get him to stop. But my point was, would having these cases adjudicated on the administrative process provide support for the criminal cases?
No.
In the sense?
No. That those two things are totally separate. And basically, the anything that's done administratively is not going to be able to be used in the criminal case.
So how are they using 18050 as a prior bad act?
Well, what happens there is, and that's kind of a tricky thing for prosecutors, but having been one and having used multiple prior bad acts, you can use some evidence from a prior case to show intent, certain scheme or you know, modus operandi. And in this case, the cases are so similar, and he's had so many instances of this that I think that it probably would qualify as a prior bad act, and it could strengthen their case. Just the facts, they don't need any kind of adjudication on it. They just need to be able to prove the facts of the older case.
Thank you.
And Ms. Ray, this is Jack Gilmore. We know that his license was suspended in 2017, so he's doing without a...
Revoked. Yeah.
Sorry.
Right, and you issued an injunction, which was never served on it, because he keeps dodging service. Mm-hmm. The reason criminal cases are a little more attractive in this particular instance is that they'll issue a bench warrant. If he doesn't show up, they'll issue a bench warrant. So if he gets stopped on a traffic ticket or whatever, you have much more chance of getting him into the system through a criminal case than you do through these administrative cases. Because you have to get service on this guy, and he's really good at dodging service.
So it would seem. Okay.
But let me just point out that from the point of view of the Attorney General's office, we're not really taking a position on this one way or another. I'm just giving you the information that I have, and this is really more of a board decision or an internal decision on your part, which is why I did not file a motion on this, because we don't feel like it's our place to take a position on this.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
And Melissa and Patty, do you have any recommendations?
Yes, this is Melissa, and in talking this case over with Deanie, it's definitely my position, also being a former prosecutor, that the board and the state have compatible interests with regard to Mr. Padilla in this matter, and Deanie was right, in my opinion, when she said he's been successfully ignoring us for the past 4 years, so why not let the criminal prosecutors take these cases and prosecute them to better protect the public? I'm hoping that the criminal result will be a conviction for this individual, which may get his attention and certainly effectively inform the public of his continued bad acts in violation of our statutes, attempting to allegedly practice surveying and harming the public. So from our administrative perspective, criminal prosecution would be a savings to us of administrative resources, both from our investigators' perspectives and from the AG's office. If the individual counties, Pinal and Pima, are going to spend their resources prosecuting this man, I think the state will be served in its entirety. So I'd encourage you to consider administratively closing these three cases and allowing the criminal prosecutions to proceed. You could, as Ms. Ray already said, reopen if you desired to. The burden of proof is slightly different in our setting than it would be in the criminal setting, but I think the end result would accomplish what we want to accomplish, in that the public would be better protected once this man is convicted.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. Is there any further discussion? Is there a motion? Can I start it?
Sure.
I'd like to make a motion, this is Jack Gilmore, that we close the administrative proceedings and we move to criminal prosecution of these three cases. Is there a second?
Mr. Chair, I second, but I think the prosecution, criminal prosecution, is beyond our purview, so
just close.
If the motion is administratively closed, I'm good with that.
Thank you. That's what was my intent. Mr. Winter, would you give a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Okay, it looks like that motion was accepted. Thank you. Let's move on to 4B1. This is case number P19-068. It's a consent agreement and order involving Amir Kaz and the Kaz Group Architect. I think there's representation here from the AG's office. Someone want to discuss this?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Scott Donald on behalf of the state for this case. There is a signed consent agreement that the board members should have in their packet, along with all the case file materials. I believe the settlement agreement is appropriate in this case, and it does comport with the settlement offer made by the board in this case. So I would ask at this time that the board accept this signed settlement agreement.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Donald. Is there any discussion by the board? A motion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Michael Ray, Assistant Attorney General.
Sorry?
Independent legal advice. I had a question from the materials whether there was any vote by the board to send the matter to hearing. I didn't see any reference to that, but to the extent there was, you would want to also add to your motion a motion to vacate the board's vote to send the matter to hearing.
Okay.
In addition to accepting. the consent agreement.
So,
Mr. Chair, I would move that we accept the signed consent, and if there's a hearing scheduled or proposed, to vacate that hearing request.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second by Mr. Jones. Mr. Winter, a roll call, please.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Okay, that motion passes. Thank you. Any other discussion? We're good. Let's move on to 4B2. This case number P18073 involving Richard Moore, architect, and RMA Design Group. This is another consent agreement in order of discipline. Would the Attorney General like to...
This is Beanie Ray. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
This is Beanie Ray. I'm on this case, so I'm just starting you.
Thank you. Would you share with the board a summary of this?
Well, Mr. Moore has signed the consent agreement that was originally approved by the board. It was updated just, you know, to change. It was an older consent agreement, but he has agreed to all of the original terms, so we recommend that you accept it.
Okay, thank you. Any board members have questions for Ms. Ray? Well, we need another motion to vacate this one as well. Okay. Would one of the board members want to make a motion? Okay, I will start. This is Jack Gilmore. I'd like to make a motion that we accept the consent agreement and this order of discipline for P18073, and we vacate the necessity for hearing.
Second.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Winter, roll call, please.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Thank you. I think that motion carries. Is there someone having difficulty hearing me? Was that...
Jeff said he can't hear you out there.
Okay.
So I don't. Let's ask the board members if they're hearing okay.
Can the board members hear my voice well?
Most of the time.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll move this microphone a little bit closer.
Jack, I can hear you fine when you speak up a little bit. Otherwise, it's a little low on my end.
Okay. I'll work on that. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item 4B3.
Should be John Condry on the phone, who is the attorney for Mr. O'Brien. Mr. Condry, are you on the line?
I am, thank you.
Okay, this is the OHA-08H docket number 20F-P16-066. And BTR case number P16066. This is another consent agreement in order of discipline involving Mr. Stephen O'Brien. And is this Mr. Donald? Do you have this case or Ms. Ray?
Deanie.
This is Deanie?
Ms.
No, I do. I'm sorry, Deanie Ray has this case.
Can you share with the board a summary?
This is presented to the board for acceptance. The consent agreement does vary from the original offer in that the civil penalty is not involved, and the cost of investigation was increased. So it's somewhat different than the original offer, but we recommend that you accept it. This case is incredibly complex. It's an older case, which is causing difficulties for the pursuit of the case. And the other complication in this case is because of COVID-19, the hearings at OWA are not in person. This is a very technical case, one that will be difficult to present over the telephone. And I recommend that you accept this consent agreement. And I do believe that the director, executive director, may have some comments that she may want to make as well.
Okay. Let's let the attorney for Mr. O'Brien have an opportunity.
And that is?
Mr. Condry.
So, what's his name?
Condry.
Ms. Condry, can you?
Yes.
Can you present your position to the board, please?
Well, I think that myself and Ms. Ray are of the same opinion. We went through this the process of identifying specific acts that we could agree on with respect to failures on the part of my client, Mr. O'Brien, to perform in accordance with his responsibilities. And then we, frankly, identified the special reasons why it was important to settle this case, because I agree that with Ms. Ray that presentation of this case would be difficult in person, but it is almost impossible for each side on the telephone. And given that, and I will say that the focus was identifying what Mr. O'Brien had done incorrectly, and to specifically identify ways that Mr. O'Brien could show contrition, frankly, for his actions. And we came to a conclusion with respect to that. And I think it's a fair conclusion given the circumstances of the case.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Condry. Any of the board members have questions?
Mr. Chair, no questions. I just appreciate the fact that both sides came together. I think it's a good resolution, and I'm comfortable that findings of fact stay the same, and you know, I'm not as concerned about the penalty since there's the cost of investigation and other elements there. So unless somebody has questions, I would move that we accept the signed consent agreement.
I'll second that.
Do we need to vacate?
Yeah.
Dr. Alejandro, we need to...
And vacate.
Yeah.
Vacate.
I would amend the motion to ask that we vacate any hearing dates.
And Mr. Boyd, we'll second that.
We'll second it, yes.
Thank you. Kurt, can we get a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. The motion passes. Thank you, Ms. Ray.
And
you're
I
welcome.
Just want to say thank you to Ms. Ray and Mr. Condry. This is Melissa Cornelius on behalf of the board and staff. to say thank you very much for all the time you both dedicated to this serious matter, and we're pleased with the resolution. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Okay. We'll move on to item 4C1. This is case number P19-060. And Mr. Donald, would you...
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Scott Donald representing the state on this matter. We have filed a motion to continue in this case for purposes of accomplishing service. This is a non-registrant case. We do not have an address on file. We have not accomplished service at the address we attempted, and we are going to need to go to additional means to accomplish service. I would request that the board set this out for 90 days for a hearing to provide time, because I have a feeling this may have to go to service by publication. Just to be on the safe side, so we don't have to come back again requesting another continuance. But this time I would ask for continuance of at least 90 days in the hearing date for this case.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Donald from the board? Okay. Is there a motion?
Mr. Donald, I had a little bit of a hard time hearing you, but what I think I understood is we couldn't fulfill service because we don't have an address, and we're continuing because of that, and you anticipate that we're going to have to serve it by publication. Is that right?
Yes, Dr. Angel, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you. I move that we continue this case as recommended.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Dr. Alejandro, thank you. Mr. Winter, would you give us a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neal Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you. We're on to 4C2. This is case number AL-19-001, involving the matter of Mr. Tyson Landon. Ms. Ray, I think this is yours.
It is mine. I'm not sure of that number you just called. I guess that is correct, but it's on the agenda incorrectly, I believe.
It should be AL, not P.
Yeah, it should be AL. Okay. So Mr. Landon was in the same situation as the previous case. We didn't have a good address. We couldn't get service. But we continued to send the documents to him by email. We were not getting bounce backs on our emails, so I felt that he probably was receiving those emails. And it turns out he was. And so he called me and gave me a decent address and a phone number and indicated a willingness to settle the case. So I just need some time on this one to get that done, because he called me last week. So we had a good resolution on this because we were in the process of doing a skip trace on him and thinking we were going to have to do this one by publication as well. And as it turns out, that's not going to be necessary. So if you'll just give me the time, I think I can get this case settled.
Congratulations.
Very good.
Step forward.
Yeah. Is there a motion, please?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we continue this case.
I will second that one, Mr. Jim.
Two.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Jones and Ms. Wyckoff. Kirk, can you give us a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neal Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode? Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. The motion carries. On to item 4C3. This is case number P16-047 and P19-018 in the matter of John Davis. And I believe this is Ms. Ray again.
Yeah, this case, this is Dean Ray. This case is one of the older cases that we've had difficulty getting in touch with Mr. Davis, but he also called me. And I've been in communication with his wife, who says that he is gravely ill and in the hospital. So I'm asking to continue it to see if I can get this one handled. I understand that maybe this is not an uncommon excuse for Mr. Davis, but I'm going to need some time to make sure that this is, that we can either move ahead or settle it.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ray. Is there a motion? Any questions from the board first, though? If not, then a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we continue case 4C3 as stated.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. We have a motion by Mr. Jones and a second by Mr. Boyd. Kurt, would you make the roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Thank you. That motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Ray.
Yeah, I just want to point out that I attached to both the Landon and the Davis case proposed orders to make this easier for you. You may want to consider those.
Okay. Is that something we need to write out, Melissa?
Do you mean the consent agreements, Deanie?
No, on Landon and Davis, I attached proposed orders for them to, so that we'll have a date certain.
Oh, got it.
For these.
Oh, complaint not be hearing.
And it should be attached to the motion.
Yeah, that was for July.
Yeah.
July 28th.
To put them on the July board meeting.
Correct.
Yes. I think we can do that
administratively. Then I can,
yeah,
either way, I just need to be able to send an order to these gentlemen that says this is when your new date is.
I don't believe the board needs a separate motion for those. They're in the materials, and had they not been presented, staff would just prepare them. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I think we're fine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deanie.
Okay. We've got Okay. 4D1. Is Mr. DePrima on the line?
Let's ask. Mr. DePrima, are you currently on the line?
Yep. Here. Perfect. Thanks.
Okay. This is case number 4D1. Case number is just 20F-P14-045, and it's a review from the administrative law judge. And who will be making presentation regarding ALJ?
That would be Ms. Ray.
Ah, thank you. Ms. Ray, we have you again.
Yes, I'm here.
Can you please review this case for us?
Mr. Dupree, this case went to hearing in front of the Office of Administrative Hearings, and that decision has come back to you. We did not note any required changes in the decision, and we recommend that you accept it.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Prima, you have the floor.
Yes. Yes, ladies and gentlemen. So I've spoken before. I've said there's been a big miscommunication here, a big misunderstanding due to miscommunications. I want to be regulated. I want to go back to work. I do have all the required experience, education experience, over 16 years of structural engineering work, which is civil engineering. And I wish to keep the PE license because I don't do what needs what's required for an SE license. I don't do schools, hospitals, or high rises. And let's see. Yeah, I did see the administrative court findings of fact, and there are let's respectfully say there are some mistakes that have been made, probably just due to miscommunication. See, I know all the building codes. I've done this, and oh, by the way, I've been a servant of the state for over 9 years, and I feel that people fail to recognize this and respect that. So I know the building codes, and as far as the part where they say I'm trying to use my seal, I am not. That's a mistake because my seal is no since 2007, September 30, 2017, has not been active. So it would not be accepted. So they made a mistake on that. And right now, I can either work for, like they said, I can work for another engineer, or I could be a, I can work independently as a designer. And I can do work under the IRC code, residential code, which does not require a license or a seal. So they're mistaken about that. As far as the, as far as what they said about not accepting the consent agreement, I contend that this the consent agreement was. I had to explain respectfully that since that contract was done and it was found that it was done illegally per ARS 12-2602. Which was, you know, part of legislation which says that there must be a substantial reason, a very substantial reason, misconduct or wrongdoing, and they would have to be signed and sealed by a similar engineer. That's a separate affidavit that says there's a reason to bring a lawsuit against someone. And that was not done. And they brought me major hardship and major grief for nothing. It's just a mistake. And I explained before that I understand that they're trying to regulate. I get it. I really do. And I have been regulated by local and building and planning departments for over 16 years. And have been subservient to these people because they know the building codes a little bit better for their locality, maybe the wind loads or seismic or whatever the requirements.
Mr. Freeman?
And so I've always...
This is Jack Gilmore. There was a decision from the Office of Administrative Hearings to not... that ruled against you on your request. And... there's a motion before the board that we accept the Office of Administrative Hearings recommendation. Are there some specific facts of issue that you want to contend? Because there's questions brought up about your...
I'm explaining there's mistakes been made due to miscommunication, and so it's not completely correct. That was done telephonically, and there was, they're trying to say that I don't have the I don't have a witness, or I don't have the experience. Well, I do. Okay, I worked at North Point Engineering. The director, he wrote a letter. He was the director. He was CEO. He was an MBA, and he worked with Ken Cochran, Army Major Ken Cochran, and he was a director of engineering. I reviewed everything with him.
Mr. Prima, on the certificate of experience, there are questions brought up about the number of years of professional experience versus unprofessional experience.
There's not, sir.
Then you
started my question before.
You put a stamp on your own certificate of experience, which is a problem.
Sir, I started my question before. Let me explain. There's people in this world that, you know, do not... you know, they don't, maybe they don't want me, maybe they have ulterior motives, maybe they don't want me to, maybe they are anti-American and hate Americans.
No, that's not the problem here.
It's true.
I don't believe that's the problem.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Dr. Alejandro.
This is Alejandro Angel, and Mr. DePrima, I think, to be clear, what the judge found was that your certificates of experience did not demonstrate the experience. I don't think we're saying that you don't have the experience. But your certificates of experience checked the box that said your experience. You checked the box that said it was some professional experience.
No, sir, that's incorrect, sir. That is incorrect.
We reviewed your certificates of experience when you came to the board before it went to the judge.
No, sir. I have the book from the last overzealous lawyer. I have these certificates of experience. There was no change. I told them there was no change. In fact, I had 56 months of professional experience with Ken Cochran. That with my education would be enough as it is. That's not an issue. Like I said, there's been some mistakes made, and you know, please don't get over aggressive with me, people. I'm just trying to go back to work. This, like I said. I'm looking at it right now, professional. This was Exhibit 1 by Kurt Wunders on the first page. 08A Docket 17F-P14-045-BTR-RES. This is your document. Okay, so that's not an issue.
This
is not an issue. It's not my... I'm pro-America. I'm not a convict. I have a clean record. I'm a U.S. citizen.
Mr. Prima, this is Jack Gilmore. No one's questioned here.
Mr. Prima.
Go ahead, Dr. Alejandro.
Dr. Angel, you even said that they should revise the consent agreement so I should get my license back so I can go back to work. You even said that.
I don't believe I said that, Mr. DePrima, but here's my point. I don't think your case is one of a technicality on whether you have the experience or not. I think the most critical finding from the judge is the fact that and this is finding number 10 from the judge, says all the respondents assert a willingness to be regulated if you were granted a license. His history with the board, prior statements and conduct during the hearing failed to support his assertion. I think, to me, the big issue is even after reapplying 3 times and going to a separate judge 3 times, you still claim that your revocation was illegal. You're accusing the board of attorneys of witchcraft. You're telling people that we're un-American, and I don't understand how you expect that we would give you a license and then be able to regulate you if that's going to be your defense.
Sir, I'm saying that. There are people in this world, I'm not pointing out, it's somewhere in the government maybe that's telling you guys to not give me a license. I'm not pointing fingers. Freedom of speech is something that can't be ultimately criticized. The Professional Engineer Act says I can make a statement anytime, what's the word, to
Mr. DePrimo, do you continue to claim that your revocation was illegal?
Well, ARS 12-2602. Do I have to read it?
I would love a yes or no answer.
Yes, and let me explain. You had an overzealous lawyer who got into a personal fight with me, him and the director. I feel it was just a personal, you know, just a misunderstanding.
I'm trying to give you good advice. I think, you know, if you want things to change, you need to understand that the board is not just trying to get you, that you've done this to yourself, and I think, you know, if you continue to just blame everybody else for it and say that, you know, everything that's been done has been poorly done, I think that's hard to sustain when you have judges three separate times saying that the board did nothing improper.
Sir, there's not even an American flag in those courts. And I'm not gonna judge that, but American people have lost faith in the justice system. Okay, there's too much, the problem is, it's too much of a mature system where people, Mr. Ducey says there's too much cronyism. Tell me, has this board been revised to six public members?
No, not yet. Mr. DePrimo, this is Jack Gilmore.
Not yet?
No one on
that, that was my suggestion. I'm the one that's good. Communicating with the... with the governor. I'm the one asking for change. Look, this freedom of speech, here's my settlement. Yeah, it's the word settlement. And you just can't criticize the individual because the First Amendment right is it can't be challenged. It's the law. It's the law of the land.
Mr. DePrimo, this is Jack Gilmore. No one on this board is questioning your ability to continue working. We're just questioning the ability to regulate you as a registrant. So we want you to keep working, get the experience, and follow the procedures and process.
Yeah, but sir, I have over 16 years of experience. I've been following procedures. And let me explain. I went down to the board to try to cooperate. And I tried to... here's what I've learned, okay? You want me to be a regulator. And I agree that I should take the constructive criticism that they give me, just fill out, you know, sign the consent agreement they give me, and just pay the fine, and just accept it. I agree. But my case, the overzealous lawyer went way out of the way, and he got the AG office, and I spoke with them, and there were some smart asses, and they went way out of the way to blacklist me.
No, Mr. Green, that's not happened.
They did. They went out of the way. They made an extremely repugnant case, and they didn't have to do that. Okay.
Hey, Mr. Chair,
yes.
Can I ask that?
Right,
I mean, we're debating the findings of fact. I think, Mr. DePrima, you've had plenty of time. Can we have a specific time limit for him to make his case and then decide?
Yeah, thank you.
You know, we don't have all morning just to...
I'm not trying to, but the thing is,
Mr. Breen, we need to wrap this up in like 30 seconds. We need to move on.
Listen, I'm trying to wind it up. Look, extremism is anti-American. It's not right. I've been trying to contest this because people won't cooperate with me. It's like an us versus them. It's like the brutal police versus, the victim on the street. That's what America's contesting right now. The brutal, overbearing police, or not. That's debatable, of course.
Yeah. Mr. Premier, you've had your chance to make your position known. Thank you. I think it's time for the board to make a decision on this motion.
You're done. Unconstitutionally vague.
You're done.
Unconstitutionally vague. And there's no... please, just a minute.
No.
There is... no due process. It's vague. It doesn't tell what you can and can't do. And so that's why it's not legit. And this has been argued over and over, okay?
All right.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
Your time.
Thank you.
Let's move on. Can I get a motion from the board regarding this recommendation from Ms. Ray on this motion?
To adopt the findings of fact.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the findings of fact.
Is that due process?
Mr.
I'm constitutionally vague.
Your time is up, please.
Well, they wasted my time for over 3 years.
Okay, that's all. Keep going, Alejandro.
Well, that's my motion. Do we accept the findings of fact from the administrative law judge as identified in his order?
Second.
Okay, Mr. Winter.
No, it's all wrong. Unconstitutional. This is biased. You have your mind made up.
No.
I'm not hearing the vote.
I'm sorry, Mr. Premier. Your time's up.
All right. Dr. Alejandro.
I'm not hearing the vote.
We're doing the vote right now. Dr. Angel?
Sorry, I'm going to start all over again. Okay. Dr. Alejandro Angel.
It's accountability or not. That's what the vote, that's what it's
Mr.
about.
Mr. Prima, your time is up. We have
hey,
a vote.
Can I ask you to mute Mr. DePrima while we vote? Can we do that? We'll have him back when we talk about completions of law.
I didn't hear the vote. There needs to be accountability here.
We're doing the vote right now, Mr. DePrima. Please hold on.
I need to hear the vote, please.
Okay, Mr. Winter?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Enthusiastically, aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode. Aye. Eugene Montgomery.
Aye. Aye as well.
Thank you. The motion carries. Do we need
Now we need the conclusions of law.
Oh, that's right.
We need a motion to adopt.
Oh, I forgot to read this.
It's okay.
So it's the motions of finding?
Yeah, now we're on the conclusions of law.
This concludes this matter before the board?
No, we need to adopt the conclusions of law from the administrative law judge.
So that's another motion?
Yes.
Okay, I need a motion to accept conclusions of law, thank you. Next issue for discussion is the conclusions of law. Is there a motion on the conclusions of law?
Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Angel. I move that we adopt the administrative law judge conclusions of law.
Second.
Thank you. Mr. Winter, can we get a roll call?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery.
Aye.
Okay, that motion carries. Thank you. Final issue for discussion is the board's order. Now is the time for the board to make a motion and deliberate. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Angel. So first I want to preface by explaining that, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not as concerned about Mr. DePrima's experience. I'm very concerned about his ability to understand, requirements and regulation, and even understanding what the situation is. I mean, I think after 4 years he failed to understand that his license was revoked and cannot be reinstated. And he can apply for new license, but through that he needs to demonstrate that he's willing to comply with statutes. So I would move that we adopt the judge's order and deny the respondent's appeal for registration.
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Angel and Mr. Jones.
Would you like to hear from Mr. DePrima?
Okay. Mr. Freeman, do you have a final statement?
I think maybe you should do the roll call.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kirk, could you do the roll call for this last motion?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Andrew Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes. Thank you. This concludes this matter before the board. The board's decision will be reduced to writing and sent out to the parties shortly. Further appeal rights to the board of the board's decision will be set forth in writing in the order. Thank you.
See you, Michael.
Thanks for your help. Okay, I think we're on to item 5B2. Is that next? That's what I've got next on my agenda.
Yeah.
Okay, this is case number HI-20-018, item 5B2. Respondent is Benetton Mincho. Synopsis of the complaint. On December 6, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, while conducting a home inspection at 8640 East Toronto Place in Tucson, Arizona, on November the 29th, 2019, failed to restore electric power to the kitchen after tripping a GFCI and pulled an outlet out of the wall in the kitchen without restoring it to its original condition. Is there anyone, Kurt, anybody here to discuss this?
As far as I can tell from our list, all items in which someone was going to call in have been already decided by the board.
The investigative conclusions, this investigation concludes that the respondent has violated board statute ARS 32-128C4 as it relates to R4-30-301.01 and that respondent failed to conduct a home inspection in accordance with the standards of professional practice for Arizona home inspectors. Staff recommendation is to issue a letter of concern for minor reporting violations. Any discussion by the board? If not, is there a motion? Well, let me, let me start the motion. That the board accept a letter of concern involving HI-20-018.
Second.
Okay, we have a second by Mr. Jones. Kurt, could you do the roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion carries. On to item 5C1. This is case number AL20-007. I'm not involving Rodolfo A. Wingo, I'm going to butcher his last name. The synopsis of the complaint, on October the 15th, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent's level 1 fingerprint clearance card was suspended on or about October the 10th, 2019. Records received from the Arizona Department of Public Safety show that respondent was arrested or fingerprinted for felony drug paraphernalia possessed slash used on or about October 9th, 2019. The arresting agency was Payson Police Department. Respondent is sole controlling person for respondent alarm business. The investigative conclusions. This investigation concludes that respondent has violated Board Statute ARS 32-128C4 as it relates to AAC R4-30-3014 and that respondent failed to comply with state, municipal, and county laws, codes, ordinances, and regulations pertaining to his area of practice. Also, this investigation concludes that respondent has violated Board Statute ARS 32-128C4 as it relates to AAC R4-30-3014 and that respondent failed to comply with the subpoena issued by the board. Staff recommendation is offer a proposed consent agreement encompassing the following order. If not signed within 30 days, proceed to hearing. Letter of reprimand, administrative penalty in the amount of $2,000, and cost of investigation in the amount of $136. Any discussion by the board?
Mr. Chair, I had a question for staff. What kind of fingerprint clearance is required by statute? Does it have to be level one, or is the regular clearance sufficient? Because it seems like he had a level one that was revoked or suspended, and then he was issued a regular level clearance or fingerprint. Is that sufficient for a controlling person?
I think, Dr. Angel, members of the board, that that's what's required for all controlling persons in the alarm industry.
I think the issue with this case, though, is that he failed to comply with the board's subpoena rather than the clearance card issue. Is the investigator here? Mr. Carlin, is that the...
But, yeah, his fingerprint clearance card was reinstated. The issue is, with this case, his total lack of cooperation has not responded to the board's request for information at all, including the subpoena.
It is a violation, and maybe Mr. Donald can address it to ignore a board subpoena.
Yeah, the subpoena, the R4-30-3014, I'll just pull it up here. Usually they have it up here as well.
Mr. Donnelly, I understand and I agree with the issue related to the subpoena and that part of the consent agreement, but then there's a question at the end, or there's a last conclusion of law that says respondent failed to comply with state, municipal, and county laws pertaining to alarm business and alarm controlling person. So that one is specifically related to the clearance card fingerprint, right?
I couldn't say for certain because this consent was drafted by staff. I don't have involvement in the case yet, but I would imagine that's what it would be related to. But Sean Thacker is actually in the room now, Dr. Angel, so let me turn the question over to him.
There's two violations within this case. The first violation, of course, is the fact that he was pulled over or arrested. His clearance card was taken. And then, during our investigation, we found out from DPS that his card was reissued at that point, and then we issued a subpoena, which he didn't follow through on. So those are the two violations that we're looking at this time. Does that help?
Yes, that does help, Sean. And so I would move that we issue the proposed consent agreement and if not signed within 30 days, we move forward to hearing.
Thank you, Dr. Angel. Is there a second?
This is Andy. I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Everode. Kirk, could you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Wolf?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes. I think that concludes all the enforcement matters for today. Moving on to licensing consent agenda. Is that Melissa or Patty?
That would be Robert.
Robert.
He has two cases for your consideration about whether to grant universal licensure.
Both are home inspectors.
And it looks like the recommendation from staff is to approve both of them. It looks like they have a lot of experience. Can we consent and grant both of these licenses? We need to take them individually.
Can we do those together?
Yeah, we can do those together.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I would move that we consent both cases 6A and 6B and grant licenses based on the universal licensing statute.
Second.
The two individuals listed.
Thank you, Dr. Angel. Second by Mr. Jones. Kurt?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carries. Okay, we'll skip item 7.
Yes.
Until next month.
Until next month.
And we'll move on to policy matters. Is that Melissa?
I'm happy to. Yes. Item 8A is on the agenda as an update. And this is something Ms. Pritzel has been monitoring for the board. You may know that over a year ago we requested to update two rules, one being the home inspector rule, in which we want to make it very clear to the home inspection population that they cannot place their license on inactive status and fail to maintain financial assurance. We had submitted that to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council after the rule had been published, and they had several comments and concerns. So Patty had done more research and learned that financial assurance has to remain valid in order to protect the public if a home inspector goes out of practice. It's not something that can be avoided without endangering potential clients. So that information had been provided to you in the background facts that Patty included in your packet for consideration today. And again, we would like to also remove the opportunity for the public to submit cash to the board for reasons that we have previously discussed, but since those two rules were combined, the whole process sort of stopped because of the questions GERC had about Rule 247. So Patty stepped out of the room, but I'm happy to attempt to answer any questions you may have about the information that she provided in the board packet. What we will do is resubmit this as a supplemental proposed rulemaking amendment to GERC with the additional information Patty obtained from professional insurance brokers, which provides E&O insurance to home inspectors. And hopefully this additional info will resolve any lingering questions GERC may have.
Okay.
So we would like the board's blessing by vote on this supplemental proposed rulemaking amendment.
Seems to make a lot of sense. You're asking, in effect, for a statute limitations, 2 year following the, kind of like that.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think it's public protection.
Melissa?
Yes. Hi, Gene.
Hi. Just a quick question. There is no specification of level of a bond or assurance by the home inspector. Does the board have any minimum threshold levels of financial assurance required?
You know, Gene, I don't have my statute book in front of me, but I want to say it's at least $25,000.
On the bond.
Yeah, and Mr. Parlin agreed that it is a minimum of $25,000, and on the errors and omissions, it's up to $100,000. So there is some specified parameter protection in there.
Right. I just didn't want them to obtain a trivial level of coverage during their inactive status. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we're on.
Melissa, and so it just seems, I know it's better now what we had proposed than that they don't have to keep it indefinitely, but
right. There's
still a cost to it. Is there any way that can be lessened? I mean, the statute of limitation you said is 2 years, right?
Correct.
For notice of claims and things like that, it's still 2 years?
Right. And we have no authority or statutory oversight regarding what these errors and omissions insurance companies charge. So we just require it, and they can then shop around to the different insurance companies for the best price. So we don't have anything to do with setting those rates.
No, I understand. I'm just thinking, if they end up paying $400 for not doing any work, how many of them are we going to have?
Right. I don't know.
Because they could just, if they go inactive, then what, do they need to spend the $400? And what would be the incentive to go to retire?
I can't answer that.
And how is that enforced?
Right. I mean, we collect the proof from the insurance company that these people maintain this bond, and then clearly if they don't, we can say they violated our requirements for professional practice, initiate a complaint, investigation, and possibly discipline them. I don't know that...
Or you limit their ability to become active based on...
True, that. Until they bring it back. Doug, do you
want to say anything? Well, if the home inspector fails to maintain the statutorily required financial assurance mechanism, the statute has a provision in it that requires the board to suspend licenses.
Right.
And after a certain period of time, 90 days, to revoke the license. Well, that's normally how
right. Those
types of violations are handled.
Did you hear that, Dr. Angel?
I did, Melissa. But I guess my question is, if somebody decided, can someone ask to be placed on inactive status, and if they do they still need to get the bond?
Yes, that's the reason this rule needed to be rewritten, to provide better explanation to the home inspectors about their requirement to maintain this insurance or a bond for financial assurance.
And do people in retired status still need to pay any registration fees, or are they exempt?
We technically don't have a retired status. hopefully next year we will, if the governor allows us to do rulemaking. But if they go inactive, they're only required by this rule to maintain the financial assurance for 2 years. And home inspection certification is good only for a year. After 2 years, they need to retest if they decide to reapply. So there are other statutes that we need to consider when and if one of the home inspectors who's been inactive wants to come back into active practice. And Patty just returned, so maybe she can more adeptly answer some of these questions.
I apologize. I thought you were still on the approving the universal. It sounds like Melissa explained it. Essentially, we took the rule package the board had approved to GIRC, which would have said you have to maintain financial assurance, period. And GIRC staff reviewed it and, you know, had good questions about what happens if this person is retiring as opposed to they're out of practice for a limited period of time. And it was a good question. So we did some research, and what we found is a person who wants to make a claim against a home inspector's FA has 2 years to do so.
I think Dr. Angel is concerned that they have to maintain at their own expense the insurance for the two-year period. And so effectively, we're not letting them retire without maintaining this expensive insurance.
Well, currently the statute doesn't allow them to stop maintaining it without getting revoked. So this is actually fixing a problem. Otherwise, if they don't retain their financial assurance, they'll first get suspended and then get revoked. The point of financial assurance is for public protection, so if you just simply get rid of it right off the bat, that public protection has disappeared.
Is there a history that 2 years is better than 1 year in terms of problems coming after the fact?
Actually, that has to do with the people who provide the insurance. That's information from them. By law, there's a statute of limitations, the 2 years, so a person has 2 years to file a claim.
Okay.
If the home inspector no longer has the insurance, a person can't file a claim. Now, if you look at the cost, and a home inspector could choose to do a bond rather than the expensive liability insurance.
Patty, this is Steve. I would assume if they don't have insurance, there's a claim filed within 2 years, they're on the hook.
They're on
That's
the hook.
That's why having...
Right. And you're right. They don't realize they're on the hook personally if they have given up their financial assurance.
Right, so it's their benefit to have that coverage for 2 years.
Excellent point, Steve. I mean, you can make it whatever time you want, but if you do it less than 2 years, you've lost the public protection aspect of the financial assurance.
Well, it's not so much the public protection, it's your protection.
And the individual's protection.
So you guys are comfortable with the final language of this?
Yes. We think it protects the public. It informs the home inspector better than the previous draft did, and hopefully will adequately inform GIRC as well.
Just a little side note. I talked to David Schwartz, because we sent this to the home inspector committee members, and David Schwartz called and he said, you know, at the time we wrote that statute, we never considered somebody wanting to retire. So, you know, he recognized there's a weakness in the statute that kind of traps people to either maintain financial assurance forever or get revoked. So he said he was good with it, and I didn't hear back from any of the other committee members, you know, with anything negative.
Okay. Well, as long as Patty and Melissa are comfortable with it, and I'm comfortable with it.
Thank you.
Is there a motion? Nope. We need a motion to adopt and approve this language.
I would like it, yes, okay. So that way we can tell GIRC the board considered it and voted to approve or not at the meeting.
And that's to approve a minimum of 2 years of coverage.
Yes.
Yes, the current rule package, that's before you.
which is indefinite, right? What's before it?
If the rule goes through, it will become part of the law. Yeah. It will give home inspectors an opportunity to not keep financial assurance forever without getting revoked. So one way or another, it's a rule that should happen, whether it's this one or if you want to look at a different time frame.
Go ahead, Stephen. Stephen, you want to make the motion?
Hello? Well, I would do we accept the new line.
So Steve's moving to approve the notice of supplemental proposed rulemaking amendment.
Second.
Thank
you.
Just like that.
Good job, Steve. And the second by Mr. Jones. Kurt, would you do a roll call?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everett?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Thank you.
Item 8B.
Should we table B because Jason's not here? Because he's only in survey.
Yeah. It's not necessary, actually. Jason was part of the Land Surveyor Task Force that helped rewrite these boundary minimum standards, and he was aware that we were going to consider whether to request proceeding with the process on today's agenda. So he's fine with us going forward today. So what you have in front of you in item 8B is my request on your behalf for an exemption to the current moratorium on rulemaking and a request to proceed with rulemaking on three particular issues. One, and I think really importantly, is the Land Surveyor Boundary Minimum Standards draft that Jason and other members of the surveying profession have been working on in draft form for the past year. They and their draft, which were attached to this, came up with what I think is a really well-written, more concise and modern explanation of boundary minimum standards, which I think we should publish as the regulatory agency, and which, if it goes through, would be the newer standard than the one we've had in our rule for the past 20 years or so. But we need to request permission from the governor's office before we can enter into a rulemaking to make these the new standards and retire the old ones. So this is actually, again, a beginning request to enter into rulemaking. I requested the boundary minimum standards, and then I also requested to enter into rulemaking to create an official retired status in our rule and to revise our existing rule, which describes other misconduct, to add in more language and additional tools for our enforcement staff to deal with some of the cases that we've seen over the past year that I think could and should fall into a category of other misconduct. You may recall that when we entered into rulemaking for the rules we previously discussed in Agenda 8A, the cash rule and the financial assurance rule we just talked about, in that request I had included the retired status request and the request to modify the other misconduct rule. Those the governor's office did not grant us last year. I thought maybe we should ask again and see if this year they would be more inclined. I don't know that it hurts us to ask, but you may feel differently. And if you do, what I could do, because I really believe we need to ask seriously to modify the Land Surveyor Boundary Minimum Standards, we could send two separate requests rather than one if you think our chances of getting one approved are better than, you know, proceeding with our request that includes three rules.
I would defer to your recommendation there. You know the...
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to be told no. I'm pretty confident we're going to be told no on all three, but I don't mind doing two separate ones if you think we may have better luck with the boundary minimum standards. There was legislative attempt this past session from a legislator to actively rewrite the boundary minimum standards at the request of one of our licensees we actually disciplined for violating the standards. He went to his legislator, and without our knowledge or input, they put forward a bill, which subsequently died, but there is interest from the industry. And if we're allowed to enter into this rulemaking, it will allow surveyors, all of our licensees, to comment and request to add additional comments to our proposed rulemaking, you know, make it hopefully more acceptable to the entire industry. So that's my thought.
Why would they object to this? What's the objection?
I would suggest separating them in part because of that interest. I mean, if surveying was so overwhelmingly popular that we thought we could, like, add on a couple things, that's but
yeah.
If we fought an uphill battle, I'd rather have them fought separately.
Okay.
I'm with Carmen, and I would also maybe suggest that we only send the survey one, because I think we owe it to the surveyors to give it our best shot, and I don't know if it does or doesn't, but it may alienate people to send more requests, so just send it on its merits, and hopefully it makes it. If it doesn't make it, then nothing we can do.
Yeah, this is very true. I guess I've shown you my proposed language. Is there something else you would like me to say about the boundary minimum standards that I don't say in the three brief paragraphs of the cover letter? I intend to include, obviously, the draft that our task force put together, but if you think I should add something else to the cover letter, I'm happy to consider any other comments you think are necessary.
Jason Booth is happy with this.
Yeah, he's good with it, from my understanding.
Okay.
So,
Melissa, I think this is Alejandro. And by the way, when I suggest that we only send the land surveyor, it's not because I don't think the other ones are needed. And I think they are needed. And I think you did a great job explaining what the benefit is of having those to registrants and the public, but I just think not at the time.
Yeah, no doubt. I get it.
With the land surveyor, my only suggestion would be that maybe we put a sentence of how this helps the public. I mean, it's not just about how surveying gets done today, but to make sure that, you know, people get a product that they can use and they can rely on when they're making, you know, transactions and things for the properties.
Okay. Excellent.
So, Melissa, do we need a motion here?
Yes, please.
Okay. Someone on the board want to make a motion for this? Yeah, we're just talking about land.
Sure, I'll make a motion that we request the moratorium of the rules, or to create rules to address specifically the land surveyor boundary minimum standards item.
Okay, we have a motion by Dr. Angel. Second?
Second, McAllister.
Thank you. Dr. Kurt.
Sorry about my computer.
Would you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Dole.
Steve.
Stephen Dole.
Bathroom break.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
That'd be passed with one absentee.
Yeah.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here I am.
Who's that?
Hi, Steve. Are you in favor of sending the request to the governor's office for the surveyor rule?
Yes, I lost connection there for half years.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 8C, Patty.
Well, that's actually Alejandro.
Oh,
Alejandro,
I thought maybe
you
were going to be
presenting. Do you want to have this discussion?
Sure, I will have the discussion. I think I see Amerigo from ACEC is on the line. So, Amerigo, if there's anything you think is appropriate to mention, please feel free. But I guess the point of this, at least part of the discussion I wanted to have is related to 1274. As you guys all know, it already passed and got signed by the governor. So board composition is going to change in August. So the conversation that I have had, which I think I mentioned to all of you before with ACEC, is to try to run a new bill. Well, the idea was to try to amend the bill before, but I think the fact that it passed really without notice and, you know, just in the middle of the pandemic, that wasn't good. But given that that option wasn't there anymore, the intent would be to run a bill in the next legislative session along the lines of what we discussed at a previous board meeting where, you know, our goal is really to get back professional representation on the board. So to add back the engineering and architect members, I don't think, you know, what I'm proposing is that we don't change the public members. I think those are good and I have no concerns with those. I just think we need the professional knowledge on the board. And then to make it more likely to move forward, you know, add some of the licensures by endorsement issues that we tried to address last time, which is really intended to expedite licensure, that it, you know, people who have national certificates and meet all our requirements don't have to come to the full board. They can get approved by the executive director quickly, so maybe also shorten timelines for approval of those. So, as you guys might recall, we ran this licensure by endorsement bill, Melissa, was it the 2019 session?
Yes.
And it passed overwhelmingly, but the governor vetoed it because there was the universal licensure bill that he was pushing. So, anyway, when I spoke to ACEC, ACEC felt that it would be beneficial if the board could state that it's in, you know, in agreement with pursuing that to make sure that it's not something that the board would oppose. So my ask is, and I don't know if we need a vote or just a general discussion, is would we want to work with ACEC in running a bill to add back the professional members while also facilitating licensure for those that meet our requirements and expediting time frames.
Alejandro, yeah. This is Neil. So are you proposing, with the new board composition, we have 11 members, are you thinking at the three professionals back so we'd be 14 members?
It would be 14, or we could, you know, if there's
$27 a month.
If there's an inclination to keep it to an odd number, maybe we do reduce one public member or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Angel, this is Jack. Instead of just ACEC, should we pull in other groups?
Absolutely.
Get a group.
Well, I think I mentioned ACEC because that's the one I'm working with, but I see Tina with the AIA is also on the line. I don't know if she'd like to speak up. But the idea is to get everybody on board. We just need somebody to sort of take the lead and with us, I think, to talk to legislatures to get a bill introduced.
I think
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, the more professional
we want everybody
to back this, the better.
Yeah, I agree. Tina, what do you think?
I think that we would definitely be in favor of this. The other thing that I'm curious about on the bill that was passed and signed, is there anything that says that architects and engineers can't apply as public members?
There is nothing that would exclude architects or engineers from applying, but don't forget the governor gets the final say, and he believes architects and engineers, the professional members, are blockading the entry into practice from other qualified individuals. So the likelihood that architects and engineers will get appointed as public members, in my opinion, is low.
Yeah, but I don't know that anybody's out there just racing to serve
on this board.
Governmental board.
I can imagine why not.
Yeah, that's a good point. And actually, I mean, ATEC had mentioned the concern that if we were to add back architect and engineer members, do we have people who are willing to serve? And I think we do know of at least a couple of engineers that
we
have
do.
Applied. Mm-hmm. And I know of an architect, and I reached out to the structural engineers as well, and they suggested they would have people. So on the professional front, we would have that covered. You're right, Tina. I don't know if there's people who are lining up to serve on the board.
Tina, I think, this is Neil, I think some of our longstanding members on our EAC committee, they would be qualified, mm-hmm. and I think they would be interested.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I think what I'll do is send something out to the membership, kind of as an update on this bill being passed, and, you know, encourage people to apply as a public member.
That would be great.
The governor's office with professionals on this case, you know, let's make him have to actually work for a change.
Agreed.
Instead of spreading COVID for everywhere soon. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
Thank you, Tina.
So anyway, if anybody has any concerns, and I'm not saying that this has a high probability of success, but, you know. It's all we can do at this point, so if we're on board, I'd like to continue communicating with ACEC.
It would be nice if we had all the professional organizations on board.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every one of them.
Alejandro, do you have a legislator?
I would have our lobbyists reach out. Who would they reach out to work on this bill?
Yeah, who's the legislator?
I think they could reach to Justin Rice at ACEC, or they could reach out to me if you want, Tina. I'm happy to connect everybody.
Okay, thanks.
So, yeah, if anybody, any of you talk to the landscape architects or the land surveyors or anybody, you can have them contact me and I'll put everybody in contact.
Okay, thank you.
Justin.
Yep.
Great. Especially since I'm going to have more time after August when I'm not on the board anymore.
Dr. Angel and members of the board, this is Justin Rice with ACEC Arizona. And I thank you for bringing this matter before the board. I did want to let you know that I am familiar with the lobbyists for the architects as well as the landscape architects. And, of course, representing ACEC of Arizona as well as the Arizona Society of Professional Engineers, we're more than happy to work with any and all associations, societies, whatnot, that are interested in pursuing this bill. The more participation, the better, of course. And, you know, it is our hope that by putting some things in place that are reasonable to this board as well as reasonable to the governor's office, that we will be successful in making some needed changes.
Thank you.
Very cool. Thank you, Justin, for helping out with this.
Great.
So do we have general consent from everybody that we want to pursue this?
Yes.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
Cool.
Great.
Thank you all.
Thank
you all. We'll keep you posted.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Alejandro.
Okay. Board's newsletter. Yep. Kurt, do you want to tackle that one?
Has everyone had a chance to review the newsletter?
Yeah. That was very good.
I did.
I had made some changes that others had sent to me regarding the newsletter. So if you have that link still, you should be able to go back to it and re-review it. But the only changes that really occurred were on the Neil's opinion piece.
Where was that?
Just the ones that you submitted to me.
What?
Just those that you submitted to me is what hey. The changes I made.
That I suggested.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't worry, Neil. It'll be fine.
There's a conspiracy.
So if anyone has any questions about the newsletter, it's following the same format that I did prior. If you have any issues with any of the articles or anything like that, I mean...
Now's your time to express them.
Yeah, after you guys are okay with it, then I can send it out via the mass email that I've done in the past.
So, obviously, I have my 2 cents, if that's all right. So, first of all, I think we should publish it. I mean, I don't see why we wouldn't. I think both Melissa and Neil's columns are very good. Melissa, actually, your column is very factual, which I think is great. Neil, I like the emotion. I think if it were me, there was one or two things that I would just modify, especially where you say that we will raise fees. I think we can say that we might have to and are likely to, but I don't think we can just guarantee to people that we're going to raise fees, because even if we wanted to, we can't without approval. So
I agree with that.
Might.
Yeah, might.
But I think, and I like your appeal at the end. I think Doug Parlin's article was good. My only real question was on the gas line article. one, is it relevant, Melissa? And,
it is
and
relevant.
Two, I think... What's that?
I think it's relevant. It's really important to public protection.
I kind of changed the title. Also,
so here's my... I think the title is the one that scares me the most.
Oh, okay. That's Kurt's fault. I'm blaming Kurt.
I actually added the question mark. I added the question mark so it wasn't just a word going.
It just seemed like something you read in the Inquirer or something like that.
Okay. We can work on the title.
I think we did here, and I think we should mention that when the... when gas companies came and talked to us, they did say all those things that you quote in there.
Right.
But they also said that in Arizona, all gas lines have pressure regulators to prevent what happened in Massachusetts.
Yeah, but those pressure regulators fail regularly in other states that have newer gas lines. So I think that's a grain of salt. But I'm happy to work on revising the title.
You know, so I think we should make it, you know, explain all the facts. And honestly, I'm not sure that this is the time to bring it up. I mean, if we're going to bring up the big issue, 1274, why, you know,
well, it's
why
just timely.
Something else to argue about?
Because we got this and then nothing was done with it after we asked. So it's just timely. You know, when would we bring it up if not now? We didn't bring it up earlier this year. I think we should just do it before it gets too stale. And before next legislative session, so maybe he would consider making the changes the industry is willing to concede to.
Okay. I said what I thought. We're obviously free to do whatever we want. So.
Okay.
Curtis, the thing about COVID questions at the quarter, I didn't see it.
It's a...
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure we answer the questions. Okay.
Yep. Great.
Do you think we need a vote, Scott, or are we just consensus on publishing?
Okay. So, Scott says we don't need a vote to approve. You can just give us consensus that it's okay to publish.
I'm good with it.
Great. Thank you.
But please at least revise the title.
Okay, I'll consult with Neil on a revised title.
Yeah, I'll take care of that all over. Deny.
Don't work with
deny.
Neil, please.
I'll keep an eye on it. I'll throw
encouragement
to you.
Thanks, Patty.
Question mark becomes an exclamation point.
Yeah, ya.
Okay.
Don't want it to become harder to evacuate.
Melissa, Ms. Jean, I just have a little nit that it only becomes relevant with respect to our scheduled August BTO meeting. Right now, in your articles, you're saying that the law, SB 1274, becomes effective August 28th. But I've seen other correspondence that says August 25th.
Yeah, it's
August 25th. Okay, and that happens to be, the BTO meeting date.
Right.
So if the law is in effect as of August 25th, then we are no longer board members to represent the government at that BTO meeting.
That's items E and F, actually.
Yeah, it's the reason we have item E on the agenda to ask you to discuss recalendaring the August meeting to the week before, just to make sure we have all of your input and ability to sit remaining.
Okay, thank you.
And I've opened a dialogue with the AG's office on the question of who can sit and what the board composition will look like. The AG's office is considering my question, which I think you all have seen, and the tentative advice is that the overarching state statute 38295 will allow industry members in positions that are not removed from the board to continue to serve, meaning Steve and Jack and Andy may be able to continue serving even after August 25th, as long as the governor hasn't taken an action to replace them. But they are considering the new language in the statute that says after terms have expired, because all three of you will have terms that have expired, but you have been serving because you haven't been replaced or reappointed, although I think all three of you do qualify for reappointment. No action had been taken. And a question remains about whether or which of the two engineering members, both of whose terms will technically have been expired, can serve in the engineering position, whether that's Gene or Clarence, because both of you have been expired. Neither have been reappointed or replaced. So there is that question that remains, and the AG's office has promised me that they will look into it. So I guess on the back side of that, the only two terms that remain valid are Jason's and Carmen's, because their terms do not expire until June of 2021. So their positions are assured or affirmed after the 25th of August. It's just a question again about whether Jack, Steve, and Andy can continue to serve, and whether Gene or Clarence can continue to serve until we hear from the governor's office. So after I have a few more words with the AG, my intent was to email our plan to the governor's office, because of course we haven't heard about who or if they have any new members in mind to create a quorum. And if we don't have a quorum when the law becomes effective, then clearly the board can't do any work.
Which takes us to recalendering the August 4 meeting.
Right. Which is why we're asking if you guys can meet with us the week previous.
August 18th.
August 18th.
Yep. What do you guys think?
Good.
This is Andy. I currently have a, looks like a 3-week arbitration, but I think it's going to get bumped. So I'm optimistic that the 18th will work.
Thank you.
I actually have a conflict on the 18th. I Yeah, I can make any other day that week except the 18th.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to be here.
Yeah, we're having carrot cake at Steve's request.
All right.
Yeah. Well, that's what I missed the most about the board meetings with the pastries and the cheese.
They're awesome today. Just awesome.
Whatever.
Yeah, hey, what if we did pastries in the afternoon, Dr. Angel? Is that any better?
No, they probably have a board meeting all day for Somas that day.
What about the 19th? Would you be willing to meet on the Wednesday, the 19th? I know Andy will be in the same position, but hopefully your arbitration will resolve.
Or the 20th.
Or the 20th, yeah. Whichever.
That's a Thursday. I'd say give Alejandro a day off, you know, the 19th. And let's talk about Thursday the 20th. What do you guys think?
I'm available
for everybody. That would be a nice day, and then maybe we do a happy hour after we're done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
That works.
Sound
I'm
good?
I'm flexible that week.
Are you flexible, Clarence? Good.
Yes.
I'm stuck in the happy hour.
Okay.
Sure. That's right. Happy hour.
Roll call.
Roll call.
Roll call.
On the happy hour?
Yeah.
So, we have consensus on August 20th, if that's okay with all of you.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Not much needed.
Thank you, guys.
Scott won't be able to be here, but we'll have another AG.
Okay.
But you'll miss the party.
Okay.
You got a gig?
There's a gig.
I already have a day full of meetings.
Okay, sorry.
That's good. We're more fun to blog and someone else's.
Okay, are we ready for executive order?
No.
Good.
Executive session. Anchor. Yeah, so you got that. Sockets that. I think the only one I really didn't do was the list of names and then not missing the answer. Yeah.
Same as.
They did. Okay.
It's going to take a big executive session.
I don't think we're going to end up doing G. We don't have an executive session. So I think we just put G on.
We
don't need to do G for executive session. We put it on just in case there was legal advice.
Oh. We need to go around right now, I think.
Yeah. So F has to do with the governor's executive order that states, and maybe I kind of gave Scott a heads up on what the board does with these executive sessions. It says that we issue a provisional license to people if license exams aren't available, but that once the exam comes available, they need to take the exam within 20 days or their provisional license gets suspended. The only group that has had the exam reinstated are home inspectors, so that was as of June 1st, but that doesn't necessarily mean they can take it on June 1st. The executive order is kind of like says they have 20 days after the exam becomes available or they get suspended, but on the other hand, they can't necessarily
schedule the
take
exam.
It so, right away, so I don't know how much the board has with executive orders.
Hey, Patty, maybe this is a question for Scott, but the order says that license will be suspended 20 days after in-person testing reopens,
yep.
Or the examination otherwise becomes available.
Yeah.
I mean, do we have purview to say, you know, yeah, the center reopened, but the exam is not really available yet? Can we give an extension based on that?
What I can say, Dr. Angel, and I have to be a little cautious because
I specifically am not able to give legal advice with regards to the governor's emergency orders that have been issued regarding COVID-19. What I can do, however, is point out that you have read you have read probably the most relevant aspect of the emergency order with regards to the question you're trying to answer. I can't give advice regarding it, but that would seem to provide for multiple interpretations.
Thank you, Scott. And I think that's certainly the intent of the order. And I mean, I guess the question is, what would be our risk if we allowed people, say, till, you know, August 1st, which is when they said they could take the test? Seems like risk is fairly low.
So, like, maybe because we know they start becoming available in August, that would be the cutoff? I mean, I guess that's the other thing, is how far into the future.
Yeah, and I think there's got to be a cutoff eventually. I don't know, I think maybe we say that August 1st is when we assume, because nobody's complained about it beyond August 1st, say that that's when we assume the test is available again, and then they have 20 days from that to take it.
Yeah, and if something different comes along, we can always bring it back. But that would be it for now. Sound good?
Yeah, it seems to work.
Sounds good. Do we need to vote on this, Patty, or no? Or is this an interpretation from the board?
I'm looking at Scott, who's looking pensive.
Probably be best for the board to vote on their interpretation of it.
Okay. So I would move that, you know, we allow home inspectors to maintain their provisional license until 20 days after August 1st, which is when we believe that the test will be truly become available, even though centers have reopened.
Second.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Angel. Mr. Jones, we have a motion. Kirk, can you do a roll call?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Eugene Montgomery?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. That passes. Okay, G. Now, we'd say we don't...
Yeah, we do not need an executive session, and in fact, our assigned attorney is on vacation.
We could call him.
We could, but I don't think he would answer.
It's probably at Andy's house in Pine Top.
Okay. The director's report is available for discussion, Mr. Chair, if you're...
So there's really nothing to review then on Mills?
Nothing at this moment, right.
All right, director's report. Melissa,
okay.
Thank you.
Our budget for this fiscal year is still in good shape because even though we are in the midst of the pandemic, we still have been prosecuting, we're still accepting applications and granting renewals, so we do have revenue coming in, and we're almost done with fiscal year. We've spent clearly 78% of our appropriation and 73% of our revenue. Anything in excess gets rolled over into our savings account, more or less, and there was $4 million in there when I last checked. So we're in a fine financial position for this fiscal year. Next fiscal year could provide some challenges budgetarily because we are on the hook, so to speak, for the cost of our attorney in prosecuting our enforcement action against Mr. Mills, who is represented by the Institute for Justice. The state's risk management is paying for the Superior Court and Court of Appeals litigation, which is ongoing, but the AG's office, by declaring a conflict, has given us the responsibility of paying Lewis and Rocha to prosecute our enforcement action.
How much?
I've seen a bill for the month of May, which was very minimal at $1,335. So they will bill us monthly. I cannot tell you how much June will be, since I was on the phone no less than 27 times with Mr. Harris regarding the drafting of the complaint and notice of hearing. We are still in the process of drafting that complaint, and we have requested a hearing date at the Office of Administrative Hearings, which will in all likelihood be continued unofficially because Mr. Harris is still making final edits to our complaint and notice of hearing. So I expect that hearing will take place later in the summer, hopefully before the August meeting. But I don't know if we will have an administrative law judge's recommended decision before the August meeting. No, it was not. Well, the Superior Court action on his complaint against us was dismissed. He has expressed his interest in appealing that dismissal to Court of Appeals.
Okay.
So that particular litigation will be paid for by state's risk management. But then we proceed with our own enforcement action on our allegations that he was practicing, actually advertising, without registration. And that's what I'm talking about specifically, that will hopefully occur as a formal hearing at the Office of Administrative Hearings. I do mention that slightly later in my director's report. So we will have some budgetary issues, primarily because we are responsible for paying those legal bills. I, again, don't know how much those will be. Hopefully, they will be reasonable. And I can certainly...
Hey, Melissa?
Yes?
Is that something that we can use from our reserve?
Yes.
In program or not?
And we are going to request an additional appropriation for that specific purpose when we submit our budget request for next fiscal year to the governor's office. So that's on the list to make an official request for an increase in our appropriation to make sure we can pay those fees.
Problem is that wouldn't take effect until 2022,
right.
But we'll figure it out as we go
right.
forward.
If that request is granted and included in the governor's budget, again, it wouldn't be effective until July 1st of next year. So the skinny budget that the legislature passed before the COVID pandemic is what we're stuck with, which means we have a budget of $2.1 million, which is our baseline budget with no extra requests tacked in. So that's what we have to deal with from July 1st of this year until July 1st of next year. So we have to be a little frugal. We have been frugal in that there are some full-time employee vacancy savings, which will be helpful and which I am sure we will use to pay Lewis and Rocha without any loss of other budget specifics going forward, and we'll see what else we can do to save some money going forward in this coming fiscal year. So that's my comment on the budget. Clearly we've had NCARB and NCWS webinars that I've listened to as a result of the COVID pandemic, NCWS, and I realize Alejandro and Jean may have listened in as well, so feel free to comment. But what I took out of the webinar that occurred last week is that NC's has lost $5 million on their testing rescheduling because of the COVID pandemic. They did mention us in their webinar saying that it was NCWS's first foray into lobbying on behalf of our agency with regard to the definition of engineer and engineering practice. And they have also disclosed that they've moved to their new building, so out of the Clemson area to Greenville, still in South Carolina. There will be another NCWS webinar this week, actually tomorrow, and a third one on July 1st in anticipation for their annual meeting, which will be August 27, so after our August meeting. And then NCARB had its annual meeting on Friday with voting that Neil took part in for several days leading up to Friday. They also have lost $4 million with the requirement to cancel and reschedule testing due to COVID. They are not tapping into their reserves, which NC's indicated they would be doing. They are planning to reduce their expenses by cost-cutting savings, not filling full-time positions, no longer going on outings and retreats, not giving salary increases or bonuses, and basically trimming down their expenses during this fiscal rather than overtly dipping into their reserves. My takeaway from their annual meeting was they gave awards to their friends like they always do. And they were talking about diversity in their NCARB by the numbers this year, directly asking the question of why does the architecture profession lose diversity as architects and registrants age through the licensure process. Clearly, they're concerned that people of color and women are leaving the profession, and there are not as many successful firms, that are headed by people of diverse backgrounds as they would like. So they're, you know, pursuing actively how to help people with diverse backgrounds remain in the profession. And they are also looking at promoting remote proctoring of exams, which I think is interesting. I don't know how they're going to do that, but that's what I heard during Friday's annual meeting. And now I'm happy to open up to our members who may have listened to the webinars. Gina, did you take away anything, or Alejandro, from the NC's meeting that you want to share?
No, Melissa, I unfortunately was unable to participate.
Oh, okay.
Same here, actually, okay. Melissa.
Okay, I know.
Melissa, I apologize. I have no clue how that whole conference went back to.
Well, I... They had really reduced attendance at these meetings because of the electronic format, and I think they had real issues promoting the meetings themselves. Like, Neil got notice of having to vote two extra days besides Friday, which notice I never got, so I couldn't pass it on to anyone. I didn't know that they were meeting several other times besides Friday, so I'm sure you fell off their list as well, Carmen, and I just chalk it up to, you know, the webinar challenges of meeting remotely.
It was
worth... Yeah, I got like 1,000 campaign emails.
Yeah, yeah.
Telling the word of boot.
Right.
It was merciful, Carmen. Merciful. So there was only of all the... the there was only one contested election, that was for secretary, and so they had Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays for people to vote, and then they had a runoff on Friday between the two top candidates. So that's what happened.
So well, Neil voted for Ed.
I did vote for Ed.
Yes.
You had to.
I know. It's been challenging to take part in these webinars, and that was actually expressed at the NC's meeting. JMAD would laugh if he heard the complaints some of the individuals expressed about not being able to meet in person and argue as they have at great length for hours at the annual meeting about their issues, Alejandra. Yeah. So, I expect that
there's a little bit
of
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Did they say anything about testing availability and plans? It looks like some of the testing centers are open, but I don't know how many tests they're giving or how people can get to the test.
Exactly. And I don't think they know exactly either, Alejandro. The engineering exams have fared better with Pearson VUE than the architecture exams have fared with ProMetric. NC's and engineering services were considered essential in every jurisdiction. So Pearson VUE have been working with states to make the NC's exams available to those who wish to take them. But again, they had a lot of cancellations and a lot of trouble logistically to the point of that $5 million loss in revenue. I don't know how many were taken in Arizona, although engineering was considered essential here. We do not approve everyone who wants to sit. They can go to NC's directly for approval. So we don't have numbers of how many exams were offered here. I do know NCARB has been very vocal in writing about their displeasure with ProMetric over the offering and availability of the ARE. It was not offered as openly and as readily as the engineering exams were, and they are very disappointed with their vendor. But I, again, don't have any specifics. I don't know how many architecture exams were available to candidates to take. I don't know if Rob has any other info on that. But, again, we don't approve directly. We let candidates go to NC's and to NCARB to get approval to take their exams directly through those national councils. So I do know that, go ahead.
Was there any discussion, because the biggest NC's exam, and probably the one that cost them the biggest loss, is the civil PE.
Right.
Which was supposed to be given, that's still a pencil and paper, so it was supposed to be given in April, and it's supposed to be given in October again. Right. Any update on the October exam?
Nothing other than they are planning to offer it in October. But I have no new information to offer on specifics related to that test.
Thank you, Melissa.
Okay. And the CLARB annual meeting will also be a webinar rather than face-to-face in New York.
Right.
So, in September. And I haven't gotten any specific info on that date.
There's a webinar on the 30th that I'll probably sit in.
Okay, good. Good.
And just see what's going on.
Right. And then ASBOG, they're going to be giving their pencil and paper exams later in the fall. So, and we have still been offering the state-specific surveying exam here in the office. So we are able, obviously, because we have two boardrooms available to us to spread candidates out, and it's not an exam that really has a huge attendance. Like this month there were two candidates and there will be three people signed up to do it on July 17th. So we are able to provide social distancing and the wearing of masks as a requirement for our own particular board candidates for that exam. And With regard to computer updates, we have invested some money in buying 10 new laptops, which will replace 10 towers in our office that we will be sharing among staff in case COVID does break out here. You may know that we have had our enforcement staff teleworking since the beginning of the pandemic with the older laptops, and now we'll have purchased 10 new ones. Hopefully that will give us some more flexibility in case we do have to have staff here working remotely, or more staff than we have had working remotely. And part of our budget request for next fiscal, in addition to requesting the money for the digitization and the money for the law firm that we'll have to pay, we'll be including a request to hire a business analyst to write our agency's requirements out so that when we submit a request to move to Salesforce, we'll have all of that upfront work ready to go. But more on the budget next month and in August for the coming, for the fiscal year starting in July 2021. I hope you noted that we have some new categories in our licensing statistics section of the director's report. Rob and Kurt have helped me with providing you an average number of calendar days that it takes staff to grant licenses in the various categories. So this month is the first month to include those numbers, which I'm hoping are interesting to you. You can see how quickly we can grant alarm agent and controlling person registrations, as well as architects and engineers. Yeah, and architects, engineers, surveyors, landscape architects, and geologists, as well as home inspectors, we still send out to evaluators. So that's where, the numbers come from, is from the people volunteering to review those applications and how long it may take them to do that work for us.
And is, that the issue?
Yes.
That the geologists and landscape architects taking so long?
Yes.
Volunteering?
Yes. Yeah. It's hard to sometimes find the evaluators, their availability. We have so many fewer of them than we do with engineers and clearly the architect board members we put to work. So that's going to be the problem that we'll have once the subject matter expertise goes off the board, is how are we going to find people to review licensing applications. So I think it's going to be an interesting statistic to provide to the governor and the legislature once the professional membership on the board diminishes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this statistic this month are actually really low because of COVID, but
yeah,
instead of 60-some application, I think we're usually 150 to 200 a month. Right?
Yeah, we have definitely gotten fewer applications, and we have also gotten fewer enforcement complaints because of the pandemic. Again, there are still applications and renewals coming in, not quite at the same volume that we have seen prior to the pandemic. And yet it is still taking our volunteer evaluators time to look through the credentials. So there you have it, and I guess we'll see those numbers, what they look like by comparison next month.
Yeah, I think that's great information, Melissa. On a separate or related question, are you guys getting a lot of questions about licensing and testing these days? And, I mean, do we have some sort of either frequently asked questions or basic response we have for people when they come in?
Rob?
I don't think we're getting anything. Most of the time they're surprised we're open and we're here. But I haven't heard too much. There's nothing really
that stands out? Because are you asking because of COVID or just in general?
Right, because they don't know how to take the exams or how the process has changed. I mean, are they asking a lot of questions or not?
Most of the questions are directed to the councils that post the exams, so NCARB, NCES. A lot of people are waiting for that October exam, and I've heard it might be a two-day thing they have to do to accommodate all the requests for the exams. So most of them just getting directed to NCES and NCARB, which is 80% of what we deal with. We are getting quite a few alarm agents, though. If you guys notice, I think alarm agents are our second most common application right now and have been for this year. So the alarm industry is really picking up for the board.
And Alejandro, if you look at the newsletter, there is a section on how does COVID impact me. So hopefully that will answer some questions.
And we've all been here, the licensing staff, throughout this this whole COVID thing. So we are, I don't think anything new has popped up because we've been just answering their questions as they come in.
Yeah, so, you know, the national councils, I think, have taken the brunt of questions from exam candidates versus our staff. Direct result of the successful decoupling, Alejandro.
That's right. That's okay.
That's right. Right. So that's what I have for my report, everyone, unless you have more questions. We do have Mr. Parlin here as well if you have questions about enforcement complaints, or Rob if he's able to offer any more insight about licensing and renewals. Thank you.
Okay, we have our next board hearing is scheduled for the July 28th. And other than that, are there any topics, issues that board members want to bring up, requesting a staff?
If so, feel free to email me or Patty or Kurt, and we'll screen those requests and only put on what we want you to discuss.
In all the honesty.
Hopefully,
just making sure you're still listening.
And hopefully Jason will be feeling better and back here next month.
I hope so. He missed today because one of his employees tested positive for COVID. So he's in quarantine, although he is not sick. Hopefully he remains well.
Okay, let's adjourn this meeting. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.